Rodgers in trouble. Does he have a vintage moment in him? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
Pressure, pass is picked off, and who is it? Big B.J. Raji for the touchdown.
Welcome back to another episode of the Packs What She Said podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Maggie Loney, joined as always by the beautiful, wonderful, intelligent Perry Goldstein. And today we have an additional special guest who is also beautiful, wonderful, and intelligent. He is a writer for Cheesehead TV, Packer Report. He is a podcaster for the Pack a Day podcast crew. He is an Oreo and bourbon connoisseur, a horror movie aficionado, and he happens to be one of the best Packers offensive minds in the game. It is Dusty Evely. Dusty!
Hi!
Woo,
hi!
That so was exciting.
Far too kind of an intro. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. This is you guys do great work. This is exciting.
Oh, we can't wait to have you. This is so fun. We miss the monthly chats with Dusty, and now we
yeah, I think one. That lasted, what, 3 months? I feel like we
yeah.
really dropped him off.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Sorry.
But we are so excited to, in the bye week, like kind of take a look back at the 4 weeks that we've watched so far of the Packers. I'd say it's been fantastic. That's an understatement. Mm-hmm. They're 4-0. They look amazing. And definitely want to focus on the offense today because that's really your area of expertise. And it's more fun to talk about the offense, I think, because they're doing really well right now. right? Yeah. So I guess we can start just looking back first quarter of the season. What is the offense doing really well? Like, what do you think they're doing really well at? And off of that, kind of, you know, what do you want them to continue to do moving forward in the season? That
you know, what's really funny, I think, is you think of offense and you think of especially early season offense, and you're thinking of like, what are they setting up? You know, what are they running? What are they setting up? They're setting up core tendencies. They're doing this. And usually you sprinkle those in, you know, typically a few per game or something. You the Packers love running mesh. Every team loves running that. But you get one or two different versions of that per game. You get play action bootleg, one or two per game, something like that, where you're setting up these tendencies over the course of games. And so through these four games, maybe you see those 6 to 7 times a pop, but spread out over there. It's been really interesting. I've not seen this in past years. It's almost like they're grouping them by game, like just to get those suckers out of the way. So like, I almost think of each game almost has a theme. Like week one was week one, kind of the jet sweep. And then you also had that kind of that clear out of bunch, that clear out and then crosser. So you kind of had that. That was week one. They ran jet sweep. And like, I mean, like the actual touch pass where they actually gave it to the jet sweep guy. 5 or 6 times, something like that. I don't think they've given it to one of those guys since, but they set all that stuff up. Week two was the Lions, and that was man coverage. That was an ungodly amount of mesh. They ran mesh in that game more than I've ever seen them run that in a game. They ran it, I think, 5 or 6 times. They came back to that the crosser stuff as well because it's against man. You're clearing out, and they had great success with it. Six version of mesh. Week three was the Saints play action bootleg. 6 or 7 times. Like they're not spreading these out, they're bunching them. And then week four, they kept running. It was a lot of slant flat, a lot of very basic slant flat to one side. And that's where Jamal Williams got quite a few of his catches, was just as the underman of the flat stuff. So you think of like they're setting stuff up and they are setting it up. And we've started to see some slight variations to that. I mean, the big with the Malik Taylor, the fourth down was kind of that the variation of that kind of clear out crosser thing. So they had set that up a couple weeks prior. But usually you see them setting that up over several games. It's almost like LaFleur is just like, I've got game plans that will work, but I also know you need to burn through these concepts and I'm just going to do them all in one game. And so you've now got all this stuff kind of set up, but you've done it game at a time. And so like I know for me, I'm really excited after the bye to see what are they going to do to run counter to that? Because they're setting that up. They're now going to run counter to it, but they've set it up in these clumps. And so everyone's seen it now. You've seen that. You're starting to see some variations. And so do they start spreading that stuff out? Or is this a game plan thing? Is this a, I mean, the Lions, I know, were the big example for me just because they're man coverage and mesh works really well against man coverage. So was that a setting up a tendency thing or was that a, we know this will work, so we're just going to kill them with it. And that's part of the game plan is you just have these core concepts you run in the game. So it's early in the season, 4 games through, so I have no idea what the trend is there, but it has been very interesting that each game has been, here's a core concept I know, oh, they're going to run this 15 times. So it's been So they've done that well. I think the game planning, I've talked about this quite a bit, the game planning and LaFleur's play calling. I know LaFleur last year talked about his play calling was something that he needed to improve on. He didn't call plays in LA. I think he called plays for the 1 year in Tennessee. And so kind of coming in, he had 1 year under his belt. And you could see that as the game went on, maybe he didn't have the best feel for some of that. Yeah. I think that's been one of my favorite things this year has just been his he's gotten so much better in that. He's gotten so much more confident. This past game is the first game where the postscript yards per play were less than the script, which last year they had very few games like that. And so he's gotten better. He's getting a better feel for everything. They've got a lot of complimentary pieces. You've got Irvin on the jet sweep as opposed to Geronimo Allison on the jet sweep. I think that they've got the pieces that work well together and LaFleur is really coming into his own. I was trying to think of something to not like, but I don't have a whole lot because it's been a really exciting 4 weeks, man.
I mean, so I guess like to your point that you were talking about, and I've been wondering this too, is do you think that they were trying to set up these different concepts based on the opponent? Or do you think it's more of LaFleur being like, hey, we got to get all this out in the open so that we can start reusing it? It's just, this is going to be, mesh week. This is going to be jet sweep week. Like you said, it feels very clustered, which maybe is not what you would normally expect when you're just kind of trying to develop a lot of this. But since it's been so bunched, is it like, this is a good alignment with the defense and, against Tampa, we're going to see a little bit more of X, or do you think it's all just kind of what LaFleur is comfortable doing each week?
I think it's, I think part of it's the game plan. Because I do think that you see certain things, you're like, we think this will work. But I think some of that too, and this is part of it, we're like using the Lions game because that was a pretty obvious example of one of the things I did not look at is where that split occurs. Like when, how many times where it was mesh run and script versus post script, right? Like I would assume like once or twice in the script and then you run the rest afterwards or something. So then does that point to, likely partially game plan and then also partially just play calling. Just if they can't stop it, we're going to run it till they can. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm sure he did have an idea of, and I think like week one or week three, they didn't run a mesh at all. And I've never seen LaFleur do that. So I think part of it is game planning. You do have like this, we think this will work. We've got the coverage. We've seen this on film that this should work against them. And then part of that's probably done just play calling of, okay, if we beat them with it, let's just keep running it. And then you're just putting that on tape a lot more. So to answer your question, all of the things you said, possibly, Maggie.
Yeah. I feel like it could be a combination where he's kind of like, all right, it's early in the season. Let's see what's working. Yeah. I think that this is going to work against this specific defense, but I also want to test out, these play calls or these schemes. And then obviously everything is kind of working. Mm-hmm. So maybe after the bye, we see a little bit of a mix between, the things that were working across all four games. I think also against a little bit more sophisticated defenses. I think the Saints is probably the best defense that we've played so far. That there may be a little bit more, like it can't just be sort of one thing that keeps it rolling.
Yeah, the Saints are good. Saints are a good example, but also that play action boot. One of the reasons you can't run that a ton in a game is because at some point the end stays home. You're not crashing on the run action all the time. You're staying home. And they never did that. I think they did that one time or something. So it was kind of one of those, well, if they're not going to stay home on this, like what's the point of stopping like that? Yeah. It's almost mean at a certain point that they're not showing any signs. And you're like, okay, we're just going to keep doing it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that is really obvious so far going from 2019 to 2020 is just the ability to stay on the field and have sustained drives, and their third down conversions are a lot more impressive. Their percentage is much higher. Even the fourth downs, we're seeing LaFleur go for it much more frequently. And obviously a lot of that is due to being on the positive half of the field. You're in scoring range, so you want to go for it. But it's, I think one of the things too, is the growth in LaFleur's acknowledging of, like, he said multiple times this season, like, yeah, I shouldn't have called that play, and he's like, I didn't want to burn a timeout, but it's like, I know going into this, I saw this dialed up and I didn't think it was going to work, but I called it anyway, because it's kind of one of those learning things. And if it doesn't work, you got him on the half yard line and they got to march 99 and a half yards anyway. So that to me has been so interesting to see, like, this development of even him understanding his own, like, scheme and how he wants to operate it.
Yeah, I know he talked, I think that was on Packers Transplants this past week. And he mentioned a couple other times as well, where the Jamal Williams fourth down, where he was like, listen, that was wrong from the moment we came out there. Like, yeah. we should not have done that. Like, I should have called a timeout. Like, he puts that on him. And it's funny that you say that, Maggie, because it is very much like you think of his introductory press conference where like the talk was, this guy seems a little nervous to be a head coach. And now he's just he's so confident in everything he does. He's so assured of his plan, but he's also not afraid to put that stuff on himself. So,
yeah,
just seeing him develop as a head coach just in this past year and a half has been just a tremendous amount of fun.
I appreciate his accountability a lot.
Yeah.
He's not one of those guys who's going to go out there and place blame on anybody else, or he really owns what he does. And I think it says a lot to me that he acknowledges publicly the things he does wrong, because you know he's going back and he's going to fix it. And mm-hmm. I think he has, like you said, Maggie, from last season to now, we've seen a huge change in him. I think the one thing that I would love to see a little bit better of is exactly what you just said. Some of that red zone play calling, because I find that we get down into the red zone pretty easily, and it doesn't always turn into seven. And I'm wondering, Dusty, you know, what you think that is, and you know what the Packers can do to kind of get better at that.
They need to bring AJ Dillon in.
Maggie likes that answer.
Yeah, I've not really looked specifically at too much red zone stuff. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, there is, you know, there's an art to calling that stuff down there. I mean, and some of the kind of crossers, some of the misdirection stuff that can work really well down there, just because you've got so many bodies packed in a tight place. I mean, and some of it's just been. I mean, I guess we're probably still having the same conversation, but if Shepard gets into the end zone and that little sprint out, like they've been stopped, you know, a couple times inside the red zone, and that kind of sucks. But like it does after like that many times over the course of four games, that does kind of come up. So, like I said, I think it's something that, you know, some guys have been injured across the league. I guess guys have been injured, so I don't know if that plays into it. Just your calling. If you've got guys in there that are not quite as familiar, you're going to call kind of more base stuff. You know what I mean? Like the stuff that your playbook gets smaller or has a tendency to get smaller because you have to call who you have out there. So I don't know if that's part of it or not, or if it's just a blip. I haven't looked at the numbers. They're still scoring, so I assume they're scoring in the red zone is still fine. It's just over four games, what they've been stopped at fourth and one on the one twice now over four games. So that has a tendency to stand out. So I think it's one of those things to me. It seems small sample size. I haven't noticed anything like, well, they're getting too cute or they're doing anything like that. I think it's going to even out. It's happened a few times. So I think that's about all it is.
Small sample size. You're right.
Yeah. That's my hope.
And anyway, I guess when you're so used to a team scoring, when they don't, you notice it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about personnel groupings, because I feel like they have been so, so creative this season with it. We are definitely seeing a good amount, I think, of like the traditional 11. They went a lot of 21 against the Falcons, which obviously when you have your wide receivers out makes sense. We saw some 31 on Monday night, which was awesome, and even some 13. So I'm curious what you think about the way Matt LaFleur is using his different personnel groupings and how you think that that's like leading to their success in moving the ball down the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's huge. I love it. I mean, I didn't look at last year. I think last year, I mean, under McCarthy, they were in the 70s, 80s, something in 11 personnel. And last year, under LaFleur, I think they were in the mid 60s. And that was kind of the dialing back and trying to get to that. This year, they're running 11 personnel on 36% of snaps. Now, so what I think part of that is due to Irvin is still classified as a running back. So I think that skews it a little, because he's lined up in the backfield. I looked this up. 3.4% of his snaps have come from the backfield. That's it. Like, he's not a running back, but he still classifies one. So that throws it off a little. But yeah, I mean, it speaks to, you know, like you said, some of the injuries or whatever. But it's the bigger thing is this is, I think, how LaFleur wants to run that offense. This is, you get that illusion of complexity. You get the heavy. They scored, one of the tiny touchdowns. They went heavy to one side with the two tight ends. It was Sternberger on the outside, and then Tanya just set slightly in. And from that look, I mean, I've talked about this too many times. If you've got personnel out there that you can run power with or go spread with, you can do anything you want. just anything you want. This past week, we started to see some more tempo as well. So now you're getting tight end heavy looks with those guys. Sternberger's not the best blocker, but he's passable, and Tanyan's gotten better there. So you've got guys who can move a little in the run game. You're getting a little more, like you said, the two running back look, you know, that 21 look with Williams and Jones a little more on the field at the same time, which they experimented with last year. So now you've got, and you've seen that. We've seen five wide spread out of, at times, 22 personnel. Like, and they can pull that off. So, I mean, it certainly seems like the vision. And I know a lot of people, you guys heard the same thing I did before the season, was they, when they drafted DeGora was, and Dylan, you know, was what their pound, ground and pound team. This is what they're going to be. And it was the whole time kept saying, this is not ground and pound. This is the illusion of potentially ground and pound if they need it to be, but you get those heavy packages and like you can go spread. And we're seeing that now. It's kind of one of those things where you see that stuff in the off season and you think you know what's going to happen. And then when it actually happens and it works really well, you can feel kind of smart every now and then. So it's been, yeah, I mean, this is the team that LaFleur wants, and he's running what he wants to. And it's been amazing. And everyone's bought in. It seems like everyone's bought in, which is just incredible.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about specifically, because, you know, like Perry said, we saw we saw a significant amount of 31 personnel against the Falcons. And it seems like every week Matt LaFleur is saying, you know, I really want to get AJ Dillon more involved. He's a second round draft pick, but it's really hard to get more involved when your top two running backs are so versatile and like they have so much productivity in the offense. I mean, they were two very key contributors on Monday night. So kind of in your mind, what do you see being his best fit for even getting on the field in a Matt LaFleur offense? Because it seems right now like it would be silly to have him surpass anyone. And, you know, people talked about Jamal Williams being a cap casualty in training camp, and now he's one of the key contributors for an offense and has some of the better hands on the team almost. His catch percentage, like completion rate, is almost 100%. So where do you kind of see Dylan, because he is not the traditional running back that the Packers typically field on their offense?
Yeah, it's weird. And we saw him, I know he was on the field. I didn't see a snap count, you know, a couple snaps this past game, went out, I think his first time out, I was like, it's AJ Dillon. And I got really excited, and he went out for a route, and they didn't throw it to him, but you know, the route looked, it was like a 3-yard flat route or something. Like he looked fine. I think my thought on this, it's tough to know for sure. My running theory that I'm going with is the Packers loved running that pony package last year with Jones and Williams on the field at the same time. They ran that against Kansas City. I know like the first game Devontae was out last year, and they tried to run that quite a bit, but those were the only two guys they had really was Williams and Jones. So you run those guys out there all the time, they're going to get very, very tired, and you can't really field an offense that way. So they couldn't run that pony package. So my thought is Dylan is the guy that you trust. And if you feel like you could run Irvin as a running back, okay, then you've got four, I guess, if you feel like looking at it that way. But my thought was always, okay, for like some of the single back stuff, that's Dylan. And then when you want to run pony, you can run Jones and Williams out there. I've not seen their numbers as far as when they're on the field too much, but you can run that look more. You can now run those two guys out there at the same time. And if they get a little tired, they need a breather at the same time, that doesn't kill you, because then you've got AJ Dillon. So like why we haven't seen them too much yet, I honestly don't know. Like, I don't know if it's injuries to other guys. I don't know if it's, you know, is pass, we don't know what they look like in practice. So if his pass protection still has issues or, you know, kind of if he's not quite as far along, I always view running backs in the draft as plug and play guys. It's weird to me that, I said earlier that sometimes you say stuff in the off season and you feel smart, but other times you say things and you sound dumb. All off season was tight end's the hardest position to come in from college and step in and be a contributor right away in the NFL, and running back's plug and play. And granted, DeGuara was injured, but that first game, DeGuara looked pretty plug and play, and then Dylan's not done anything. So feel pretty dumb about that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think as it goes on, like I said, maybe they're just setting stuff up these first 4 weeks. As it goes on, I wouldn't be shocked to see more Dylan. And then along with that, we see more of the Jones-William package at the same time. That's my hope anyway, because otherwise I don't – the goal line thing's still very weird to me, why he's not getting – like, because that's – if he's on the field and you don't feel like he's a pass catcher and they're not going to respect that, I get that you're kind of telegraphing your intentions. So like between the 20s, I get it. But if you're at the one – it doesn't matter if you're telegraphing your intentions. He's a large man, just run him into other large men. So I don't know. Like that's weird to me, but that's kind of my theory on Dylan. My youngest brother's theory on Dylan is that they're not going to give him any carries until December just to make sure his legs are as fresh as possible to murder people, which I'd be fine with as well.
That sounds, yeah. I would love that.
Yeah. I wonder if like the success of Jamal and Aaron Jones, because they run and they catch passes and they're both very good in pass pro, like you mentioned. I wonder if LaFleur is just kind of like, I don't know what AJ Dillon brings when both of these guys can do all three things that I want in a running back right now. Like, why take someone off the field if they're being successful? That's my only thought is, you know, if yeah. Jamal was out there the other night and he was, you know, dropping passes, and I think we got a little bit stuffed a little bit in the run. I think what was our average carry against the Falcons? Like very low, I think under 3 yards.
Yeah.
So that to me is like, maybe you put AJ Dillon in there, like you said, for, you know, shorter yardage first down situations. But yeah, I would like to see him. I mean, we were with you, Dusty, in the offseason. Maggie and I were like, he's going to be the only rookie that actually has a contribution this season. Yeah. And it's going to be so nice. Ha ha. Look at our second round pick actually doing things. And, you know, he's been relegated to like running back 4, but there's still a lot of time. There's still a lot of season left. Very for true. Him. I guess, I don't know. I mean, we've talked a lot about LaFleur and, you know, he's becoming a much better play caller this season and feels a lot more confident and in rhythm. And I think that every time I've been watching this year, I just feel like this marriage of LaFleur and what he's trying to do complements Rodgers' skill set at the age that he is so, so well. Like Rodgers' accuracy and arm strength are still at an all-time high. And LaFleur is like scheming guys open and doing things so Rodgers can stay in the pocket and he doesn't have to go off script and he doesn't have to scramble. And I just feel like this marriage has been so beautiful. And there was all this hoopla on the off season, right? That like second year with Matt Ryan, Matt LaFleur brought him to an MVP season. And I was like, all right, let's calm down. Like, I don't want to get my expectations too high here, but we're actually seeing that with Aaron this year. I don't know. What do you think? Is Aaron on the way to an MVP season?
I think he could be. I mean, at this point, the only thing that's stopping him is Russell Wilson going nuclear. Well, I guess the only thing stopping him is a Schottenheimer, I guess, right? If he decides he wants to go back to the run and get Wilson's numbers down. But I mean, yeah, he's playing. It's weird because he's playing at a tremendous level with, like you said, he's not being asked to do too much. He's going off script only really when he has to, only when stuff starts breaking down. I haven't charted it, but it's what, probably less than 5 times a game he's doing that. And he's hitting he's hitting so many gimmies, man. Like all of that stuff, it almost seems like cheating at times. You think of like the Saints game with so much of that play action bootleg. You just hit the guy in the flat. If you don't hit the guy in the flat, they had the big one of Lazard and they start drooping back on that. And it was just, okay, I'm going to hit Tanya and it's legit, or Sternberg, I guess, for like legit a 5-yard air pass. And now that's going to be 25 yards because there's no one over there because it's wide open. Like there's those layups that just were not, if they were in the system before, they weren't in at the level they are now. And I mean, like you said, all off season, there was the talk. There was so much talk of it's the second year in the system. And is Rodgers going to buy in? This runs contrary to what he's been doing for years. So is this something that he's capable of doing, or not even capable of doing, but is this something he's going to find comfort in? Is he comfortable doing this? Was at the Hawk podcast, one of the Hawk podcasts, I think he was on, when he kind of talked about just the terminology. And I know there's a question of like, what's the translation like? Do you ever get over that? And he's like, well, no, I've been doing this for like 15 years. Like every time that goes, okay, well, they call this, I call it this. So is it going to slow down? Is that comfort level going to be there? And I think, I mean, you talked about the marriage between them. I mean, it sounds like they've worked on every level of that, to even down to terminology at times. Well, it's a little quicker if maybe we rename this. Like it sounds like a collaborative effort between the two of those. Who knows how much of that is actually true, but both those guys have talked about it and they don't seem like guys who would lie about those things. Roger seems refreshingly honest lately. So I don't think he would be prone to lying about any of that stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think it's two guys working at a really high level and Roger seems totally bought in. And it's like you said, it's what you want out of this in his time of his career. You get those layups and he can also just take those shots downfield, and those shots downfield are now easier because you've got some of the speed guys, but you've also built up And it was one of my issues with McCarthy a little bit was not the stuff he ran, but some of how he ran it, where like you weren't necessarily setting up those shots. It was you guys listen to the Robert Mays and Nate Tice podcast. And I talked about, I can't remember what offense to talk about this year, where it's kind of like this offense feels like this. Okay, we're five plays in, now we take a shot. That's almost how McCarthy was sometimes. We take a shot deep now because that's what you do. Whereas LaFleur is building this stuff. So even the deep shots are more open than they were before. It's I could talk about it for entirely too long, but it's a beautiful marriage between them. It's working great.
So then I guess one of the questions that I would have as somebody who's studied the offense, like as thoroughly, you know, were these concepts in Matt LaFleur's offense in 2019? Like what is making year two so successful? Because, you know, when AJ Dillon and Josiah DeGuar were drafted, a lot of the narrative was like, hey, Matt LaFleur has got the pieces that he needs. And I bought into that. You know, I was like, hey, these are two pieces that will help him be more successful on third down. Like there was this whole idea that like maybe his offense wasn't as effective because he didn't have the guys. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing in 2020 that the guys are the same. Like the nothing. DeGuar unfortunately had the injury that took him out for the season. Dillon's not getting snapped. So like, where do you think the change came from? Is it like LaFleur understanding his players, his play calling?
It's everything. And I think it's also incremental improvement from everyone else. We start with Rodgers. Rodgers, like I said, it's the comfort level there. And I know he talked about in the offseason, but you could see it at times last year. You could see him drop back, he's rolling, and there's a couple different ways you can go with that. He goes back, he's looking, and he sees a guy there, but there's a moment of hesitation. And you hesitate a moment and then sometimes that window closes. And so that's I don't know if he didn't necessarily remember where that guy was supposed to be. The play caller wasn't trusting that guy or whatever, but there is kind of like this, okay, I'm in a new offense, which is way different than anything else. You're thinking for a little bit longer than you were before when that stuff came second nature to you. So I think that's part of it was Rodgers' comfort level in the offense. There was also the comfort level in the receivers. There was, a couple of years ago, with EQ, there was a specific play against the Falcons. That was Philbin's first game where Rodgers is rolling out and it looked like this. He didn't know if EQ was settling down in his zone or if he's going to keep running. So Rodgers ends up throwing the ball away. And so that was a different era because that was the short lived Philbin era. But but some of that stuff also carried over into last year. I know the Lions game, the week 17 Lions game is a perfect example where he was chucking deep and was missing. I'm putting scare quotes on that because he wasn't. Some of that was missing, and some of it was just there was options on some of those routes, and he's reading something one way, and the receiver's reading something a different way. There was a Lazard one where Lazard runs a dig, and Rodgers throws the post, and that safety's kind of coming down. He's kind of crashing that dig, so Rodgers throws over the top. So it's those little options that they just were not on the same page with. Rodgers was reading something differently than the receiver was. Now, some of that's Rodgers because he plays at a high level, and some of that's just Rodgers is wrong and the receiver runs that right. And whatever reason, they just weren't on the same page. So I think there's comfort level in the offense. There's comfort level with the weapons. And like you said, I think, you know, that some of those guys have gotten better. I mean, Tanyan's better than he was last year. Tanyan started coming up a little last year, but then he got injured. But towards the end of the year, he was showing up really, really well. And so you get that incremental improvement from him. You hopefully we're starting to see that from Sternberger a little bit. You get, I think Lewis is being used a little more.
Yeah,
I think some of that too. We talked about the personnel groupings earlier, right? Like they were still running, and both of those guys have talked about that. They weren't running LaFleur's offense. They're running a hybrid LaFleur-McCarthy offense. So you still kind of went a little heavier 11. So Lewis was out there, but not a ton. Well, now Lewis is out there quite a bit. He's doing a little more in the receiving game, but he's also doing a little bit more as a blocker. So I think it's, again, like everything else, I feel like it's a little bit of everything. I feel like LaFleur has grown as a play caller. So we've got that. You've also got incremental changes that you hope you were going to see from these guys. I think MVS hasn't quite taken the jump. I thought he was going to, but I think he's still better than a lot of people give him credit for. EQ's injured, but you get the jump from Tanyan. You get, a jump from Jamal Williams. You get Aaron Jones just being Aaron Jones, and you get everyone's comfort level is up. I mean, I think that's kind of one of those things in the offseason. They were 13-3 last year. I know a lot of people kind of were bagging on them for not a great 13-3 season. And if you look at Pythagorean record, I think they were roughly a 9.5 win team. Like they overplayed. And generally, if you're over a win over your projected based on your points scored and points against, you're due to a regression next year. Like almost always. But you look at this year, and it's there's all those reasons for hope again that you hope are going to happen. It's second year in LaFleur's offense. You didn't draft anybody, but you've got third and fourth year guys now coming up that look like ready to take that leap, ready to go. And all that stuff seems to be happening at the same time. So even with DeGuara not out there, I think the offense is better with him out there. And even with Dylan not doing anything, I think everyone else, including the coaching staff, has just gotten better. Everyone's just a little more in tune.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Detroit game in week 17, because that's the one that I kind of think of as like the really blatant example of things. Just, it wasn't that Rodgers was missing, it was that they were not hitting.
Yeah.
Which is like
a good distinction.
But now things are hitting, and it feels less like, you said, you know, let's just take a deep shot and see how it goes, versus we've seen that the defense is responding well to this, so now when we do this, we can actually hit that. Yeah. And I don't know, I'm curious, like, I thought the Falcons game was really fun because we got to see a lot of guys really featured who don't actually normally get that much, like, get that much attention from the play calling. Or even Rodgers, like, we've seen, I think Maggie and I have talked about this a little bit, but like, we've seen this year kind of Jamal running routes, right? But he's like the last read, and Rodgers doesn't hit him, and he's still open, but he's not getting there. And so I'm really curious, after the bye, hopefully we get Devontae back, and I'm like curious how LaFleur kind of like weaves Devontae in there, because he is getting success from all these other guys, and you know that Devontae completely changes the game because he pulls defenders his way, but he's also dominant, and you want to get your number one wide receiver, you know, the touches that he deserves, but you also don't want to lose the success that you had running the offense against the Falcons.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it, you know, like you said, I think it changes it. It's got to change it a little bit, but, you know, they only put up 30 points this past week, Perry. You know, how good were they really, you know?
Okay, so Devontae gets two touchdowns, and we're where we're supposed to be. Got it.
Yeah, there we go. But, I mean, Lazard's gone too. So, yeah. I mean, so touches come from somewhere. You know, DeGuara's out. Not that he was eating a bunch of touches or anything, but,
you're just,
you know, Tanyan's not going to be open all the time. So, I think, I mean, I hope Tanyan becomes more of a feature now. I do think that's probably going to happen. And maybe it does shift a little more wide receiver heavy, but it's not like they were going, you know, four wide receivers when Adams was in. So I think it changed a little. Like you said, what was the first game, second game, when he got, what, 14, 15 targets, whatever that was? Like,
first game.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's happening again, but like, I don't know, 10 targets for Adams, and then you spread everything else around. I said maybe Williams doesn't get as much as he did, but Williams, some of that was, a lot of the stuff was just flat stuff, and they were sagging off, so we just hit him, and that's not open all the time either. So it's just I think they hit that one, I think of all of his targets, they hit the one vertical with him that kind of went up the sideline. That's one of the things they've not hit yet this year, has been like that seam vertical from the backfield.
Yeah.
They're trying to hit it, and that was one of them, and that wasn't open, but Williams was open on the outside. So I think that's the only time they sent him deeper than like 5 yards or something. So like, it's kind of one of those, again, kind of game plan, kind of reading that stuff. If that's not going to be open all the time, and if that's not open, well, you know, Devontae's open likely.
Yeah. I think it also gives MVS a better shot of actually getting, you know, catching some of those, because he was getting probably like the number one corner, and he called it the 1-7 treatment with the double teams. And he's just not the guy who's going to be able to beat those. I think there was like a back shoulder throw from Rodgers that should have been a touchdown in the Falcons game. And you know that if Devontae's in, he catches that, and that's a touchdown.
Catches that all day. Yeah.
So I think it will open things up for MVS. At least that's my hopeful thought.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too, like, you know, everything so far in the post game has been that each week it's somebody else. And I think that that's something that's really unique about this year in Matt LaFleur's offense. And we saw it a little bit when Devontae Adams was out for the 4-game stretch, was, you know, obviously the Packers went undefeated in that stretch. They were able to spread the ball around really well in Devontae's absence. But like, to both of your points, you know, it was week one with Devontae, and then it was the Aaron Jones game, and then it was, you know, kind of the Alan Lazard game, and then we had the Jamal and Tanya game. So when you get all these different pieces who are proving that they can do different things, whether it's mesh or, like you said, a screen, whatever the play call is that these guys are getting open, the wheel routes that we desperately want to see hit that have not hit yet, whether it's Devontae in double coverage, like, somebody's always able to get open. And the players have alluded to that as well, that there's just such a comfort where they know that the expectation is they're all going to always get the ball, and then they're making plays when the ball is thrown to them. And I think that that's just kind of been like the really unique part about this offense. And I think it's how they're putting up so many points, because just the expectation is the big play. And whether it's, you know, your 5-yard big play or you're just converting a first down, you're keeping the chains moving. And time of possession has also been, I think, pretty astronomical for the Packers, at least through the first couple games. I think it kind of evened out the second couple games, but
yeah, I mean, like you said, that's a big part of that. Like you said, he's taking what they give him, and you've seen so many times you check down the field, and what's the West Coast adage is touchdown to check down. He's basically doing exactly that. Like, you're looking, you've got, you know, maybe a 2-man, 3-man route and then a check down underneath. You look, nothing's open. You can see him go through his reads, and that ball's out by the time he hits his fifth step in his drop, but just down to the check down. Like, he's taking that on a level that he's not been doing recently. So yeah, it's, I mean, that alone has been incredible. I know. And one of the other things, I know that one of the narratives over the past, I don't know, few years, not totally correct, but there is some truth to it, that he will have a tendency to lock onto Adams. He's not really doing that. Even when Adams was in there, I mean, Adams was getting those targets, but a lot of those Adams is the first or second read, and he's just open because he's Davante Adams, you know. Like, he's not throwing to Davante Adams, or he was not, out of the detriment of everyone else. Like you say, he's
forceful.
Yeah, no, he's finding the open guy. He's not, if Devontae's covered and someone else is wide open, he's thrown to the wide open guy. So it's been just watching kind of that version of Aaron Rodgers show back up. That's just processing and just find the open guy. It feels so alive every week, man.
It's so fun. No, Maggie, we need those wheel routes on linebackers that are not named Eric Kendricks, because we can't do that against him. No, absolutely. I think, you know, I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I want to get your take, Dusty, because I feel like something that's working so well with the offense is that, like, players just have so many different roles, and you get different things out of them, and it's not predictable, because each of the players obviously are in their specific position and do that well, but then they expand out of that. And I'm wondering, like, because we've seen it with the 49ers, how they use Kyle Juszczyk, and everyone loves to talk about that. But I think it merits some kind of discussion in, like, this new wave of, like, gadget player, where it's like, can you really pigeonhole a player like Tyler Irvin into being a running back when he's barely in the backfield, or Josiah DeGuara when he moves around the line when he's healthy? You know, like, is this maybe, like, the movement forward in football offenses? Is this, like, idea of, like, a gadget player?
That's a dream, man. I mean, really, it's funny, because that is, I mean, I've been preaching for years now. It's really more a slot. Everyone asks me who's wide receiver three, who's the slot. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. Like, especially in, I know one of the things LaFleur does, and that's part of the movement on offense, and McCarthy was doing that to an extent before he left, was the kind of the compressed formations, which just, we've talked about this before, it changes where your open space is. Your open space and spread is middle of the field or wherever they break off those routes. Compressed is the edges. So now it behooves you. Can I say behooves you? Is that correct? to get kind of faster gadget guys, because you're compressing. And then from that point, it's all about the angles out. You're trying to get, if you get a guy like Irvin, like man to man with a linebacker across the field from him, he's just got to outrace him to the sideline, which he can do. I mean, so that's part of it. And it is funny, because I mean, there has been the if this is a revolution, which makes sense, I don't know. It's happened on the defensive side of the ball years ago to some extent, like these hybrid players, you know, think of Deion Buchanan, you know, kind of that, one of the first guys that kind of would sit down and kind of become that hybrid safety linebacker, not the first guy, but of the new wave, I guess. And now everyone's got, you know, guys that do that. You want to be versatile. I've said for a while, without fully meaning it, I guess, because I don't know how much I trust the run game, that at some point you get all of these, the defense just keeps getting lighter and lighter. At some point, an offense is just going to go heavy and just hand the ball off 50 times a game, and those hybrid guys can't deal with it. And I think what's happening now instead of that is you're now getting these kind of hybrid guys on offense. Like you said, these gadget guys on offense that become a little bigger. And part of that is that it's all from the defensive side, you're matching up with the offense, right? You're trying to get a guy that can match up if they go wide, that can sit back as a safety, or if they go heavy, that you can sit up there. Well, so then the natural thing on that for the offense is, okay, then you get guys that you can't match up with. It doesn't matter who you have, you can't match up with. So you're creating matchup problems with that. And so I do think, I mean, yeah, gadget guys are just guys that can do a little bit of everything. I mean, that's, say, DeGuara is not, you know, I think his RAS was in the eights or something, like athletic guy that you can't cover him with a linebacker and he can move you in the run game. So, I mean, it's, the trick is there's not 1,000 of those guys out there. It's tough to find guys that you can do to, I mean, if you're looking for a tight end that can move you in the run game and then also receive in the passing game, if there was guys like that out there, everyone would be taking those. So it's tough to find those guys that can do that. But I do think that, yeah, that versatility offense is huge to combat some of those kind of hybrid guys on the defensive side. It's that constant kind of push pull of offense and defense. There's a really good book. I think I've talked about it. The Genius of Desperation by Doug Farrar, that just takes that kind of, you get that push pull of that basically throughout NFL history. And I think that's a really good way to kind of look at where we're at now, is kind of this, some of the movement of some of these guys and where you're kind of putting them to kind of combat. It's one side does one thing and the other side does another thing. It's like a constant chess battle, but with like large sweaty men.
I think one of my favorite quotes from the Aaron Rodgers presser was, he said exactly that. You know, he was like, when we have Jamal and Aaron on the field at the same time, you see defense that either have to commit to nickel or dime because they want to play the passing game, or they commit to a heavy base and then they're vulnerable because they're trying to stop the run, and we have guys who can split out wide. So just the idea that the Packers are winning differently, and Matt LaFleur had mentioned it a little bit, but, you know, he wasn't there for the McCarthy era, so he can't really say as much about it. But Aaron Rodgers, you know, there's all this talk always about how he hasn't had weapons like the 2011 team, and that's fair. I mean, there won't be another offense like that probably for a while.
That was stacked on a level that shouldn't be legal, basically.
Right. And, you know, there's just always been, like, he's had a favorite target or a person, but he hasn't really had, like, a full arsenal. Maybe since 2014 you could stretch it, but, you know, now he has a versatile running back too. He has a versatile wide receiver, a couple that can do different things. He's got, if Tanyan makes a leap, and you know, we're not crowning him the next like JerMichael Finley, but that he can have those big plays, a potential for the offense. So now we're seeing Aaron Rodgers, and Perry and I have talked about this, just this idea that Aaron Rodgers has had to be Superman forever, and that's kind of been his role, and it hasn't been fair because the expectation is that he has to be perfect. And when he cannot perform to that level of expectation, he's suddenly having a down year or something's wrong with him, mm-hmm. when he just hasn't had the pieces to be successful. So I think the idea of bringing in LaFleur and giving, even if they're like, you know, second string kind of guys that you don't expect to be a star, just the idea that this offense can function so seamlessly through Aaron Rodgers' arm, but he doesn't have to kind of be a hero, is I think what's making this so unique, as opposed to some of those previous years that we saw in the tail end of the McCarthy era, where it was, you know, live or die by his arm, and you just kind of hope that he can do enough with what he has around him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny that you bring up the word arsenal there. And I still think there's a, not, you know, not necessarily the way you used it, but I think that there's still a misconception about a lot of people. And you had the draft this year as well, that they didn't draft a wide receiver, they didn't draft a wide receiver. But arsenal, as we're seeing this year, it's deeper than that. It doesn't matter. It's just who can do what that fits that offense. And you get guys, like you say, it's not even, let's say role players, because that sounds insulting, but it's basically what it is. You get a whole bunch of role players who know what they do and do it well, and can do a little bit of both things. You don't have to be amazing. Like I said, like Sternberger is not an amazing blocker. He's a willing blocker, but he's not an amazing one. He doesn't have to be. He just has to, like, sound like a proud parent. He just has to try his best, man. Like, he just has to try, and he just has to not be like actively terrible. It's the run game. It's play action of the run game. The run game does not have to be successful for play action to work. You just have to show a willingness to run out of certain looks for them to respect that. That's basically all it is. And so, yeah, someone like Tanyan, someone like Sternberger, those guys might not be like stars, although I hope they are, but they know what they can do a little bit of both. They're dynamic receivers, dynamic-ish receivers in the passing game. They do enough in the run game, enough to sell those, that kind of what they're trying to do, some of that misdirection stuff. And everyone's playing their role. We talk about Jamal Williams a lot here, but there was a play from this past week that I loved in that. And we were talking about it. I was watching it with my brother and a friend, that was just a swing pass to Jamal Williams. And he's on the sideline. and he like he looks for a second like he's going to step in, and he sees a safety there. And so instead of stepping in, he just steps to the outside, puts his head down, and gets additional 3 yards because he knows what it is. And my friend, I think it was back to my youngest brother, said something like, but he's like, Jamal Williams, like if Brandon Jackson like knew what he actually was instead of what he thought he was, where it's just he knows what he does. He does it well. He takes what he can get. He puts his head down, and you get the few yards, and you come back. They've got that the roster's stacked with those guys, so they don't have a ton of dynamic wide receivers, but they've got guys who just fit what they're trying to do so well, and can sell it enough to make defenses respect it. It's
yeah, it feels like a true do your 111th. Like yeah. you preach that, but like you get your assignment and you go out there and you execute it to the best of your abilities. Yeah. And if you get the ball, then you make a play. And if you don't, then you know you did what you were supposed to do. Yeah. And it feels like a winning formula. I don't know. So far through 4 games, it feels like a winning formula. I'm really excited for the rest of the season. I'm kind of sad that we have a bye, but also happy because I want everyone to get healthy. Mm-hmm. But how are you feeling? I guess we definitely should wrap up because we've definitely kept you way longer than expected.
I'm good for as long as you want, man. I'm here.
But like, what are you feeling for the Bucks game? Like, what are you looking for? Do you think we're going to win? I think after watching last night, feels winnable.
It feels really winnable. I mean, the defense I still think is a concern, but also with I haven't brought him up yet, and I'm talking with Maggie, so I have to. Was Za'Darius Smith looking as good as he did? I mean, this past week, he'd been kind of quiet, but this past week, Za'Darius Smith kind of did what he needed to do and just was a wrecking ball like we saw most of last year. So I think seeing what that Bucks offensive line looked like, I think Z's going to eat, hopefully. And like you said, I mean, this is before the season was, God, man, I hate the early bye. I hate it. And now it just feels like a godsend. Yeah. Like, well, now everyone can get healthy. This is great, especially with Gary having been out. So yeah, I mean, the big thing about the Bucks game was just the penalties. Like, I thought I was like watching like mid-90s Raiders teams or something. Like just awful penalty. And there's not been a ton of penalties this year. I feel like penalties have been down across the league.
No.
And they've been terrible. So
Jalen Johnson had a really rough game.
He didn't. So, I mean, I think it's the big play is going to concern me on defense. But I don't think Brady completed a pass more than 15 yards down the field yesterday. So, I mean, I'm always nervous before a game. I think there's going to be cause for concern. But if the Packers can get healthy and this Bucks team is the team that they're going to meet, I think it's going to be fine. It feels like it will be fine. They do have a decent defense, I think. But I know Vita Vea is out for the season, which sucks. Yeah. So that's going to hurt them. But They've got some good guys on the defensive side. So maybe probably the best defense they faced so far this year. So if they keep the penalties down, maybe the Packers won't score 55. You know, I don't know, but I still think they win it just based on what we saw last night.
Yeah, I think it's another 30 burger. Do you call it a burger if it's not 40? I don't know the terminology. But
you know, I heard someone do it earlier this week, and I was like, I don't know that I've ever heard that before, but I'm fine with it. I think as long as it's over 20, like 20 sounds sad. Like, I'm not doing 20 burger. Like, yeah, but you lost 23-20. Like, that's not – you don't brag about that. I feel like 30 feels like maybe a low threshold, but a threshold.
Well, that's what we strive for here is we set the bar really low, and then
Dusty, thank you so much for coming on. This was amazing. I feel like I could go for another 45 minutes, but I'm not going to do that to either of you. And also, I don't think anyone would listen for another 45 minutes. So just really thank you. You're one of our favorite people to talk football with. Just so knowledgeable and just you make everything, even when it's complex, sound so simple. And I think it's an amazing skill. So
thank you.
So that everyone who's listening can find all of your work, why don't you let the people know where to follow you?
Yeah, I'm over at Twitter at Dusty Evely. I forgot what my name was. And then so I write weekly. I've got two articles over at Packer Report. One, which is just I call it my favorite pressure, which maybe I should change that. I don't know. Some people call it something different, which that's fine. Which last year turned into a whole bunch of Z Wrecking stuff. And this past week was Z Wrecking stuff, which was awesome. And then on Friday over there, I do a playbook thing, which I usually take like one or two concepts and really dig in on it. And then Wednesdays during the week over at Cheesehead, I do all the passing concept stuff. So again, this year has been fun just because it's been it makes my job easier when there's a very specific theme to follow every week, so then I can group plays a little easier. And so LaFleur has done that, which is really, really nice of him. So yeah, that's me, I guess. That's where you can find me. That's my stuffs.
Maggie, where can the people find you? Everyone already who listens, I feel like, should already know, but
they should know. But now you can find me on Twitter at Maggie J. Loney. I write 2 articles a week for Cheesehead TV. You can catch Perry and me doing Happy Hour with Game on Wisconsin every Monday. And I'm also with the Thursday Pack-A-Day podcast crew. Sometimes I do enough where I forget what I do, but that I feel like I got it all. Perry, where can the lovely listeners find you?
So Pax What She Said, of course. Please follow us on Twitter at PWSS Podcast. Like and subscribe on all of our streaming services. I sound so legit when I say it like that. I podcast every other Monday with Andy and Alex at Pack-A-Day. And I'm now doing a some Packer Report preview and recap stuff with Ross Uglum. And those come out a little bit to our discretion, but typically Tuesday and Friday. Really depends on when the All 22 comes out for the recap stuff, but that's been really fun. And those are super quick. We're trying to keep them under 15 minutes. So you can check us out there. And Dusty, again, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Before I go, guys, thank you so much for having me. You know I love both of you to death, and you guys are killing it here. All of your other streaming platforms, you're killing it on. The Packer Report stuff you've been doing is amazing. The Happy Hour is incredible. I don't get a chance to catch it all the time. And then the work you're doing here, I mean, just not just the football stuff, which you guys are just absolutely incredible at, but just using your voices to do good things has just been incredible to watch. So I love both of you, and you guys are amazing. So thank you for having me on.
Anytime, open invitation.
Thank you. I'll take you up on that. I'll see you next week.
All right. It's Pax What They Said starting next week.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Dusty. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.